All good. Okay. I'm going to step away just for a minute. I'll be back in a moment.
Okay. Wait, are
what the
you...
fuck?
What?
Are you leaving it going, though?
Yeah, of course the recording's gone.
Oh, no, but I'm saying, okay, yeah. I thought you were saying you needed to, because I was going to say, when you did hang up, it closed the whole thing down.
Oh.
I thought you were saying you were going away again. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, no. Nope. So I just have to step to the bathroom, but I will be back.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Good idea. Yeah.
All
right. Should take care of that. All right, now we get Patty 7.
Kevin, are you back?
I'm back.
And I see Patrick still ringing here. We're like, hey, Patrick, you with us? Cool. Then hung up on
Right, pretty much.
Psych.
Did you guys know that the British Freemasonry apron pictures a bluebird?
Ooh. I did not.
Yeah.
Hey, has anyone seen this story going around of so there's like a Masonic police force that was...
Yeah, that's the word on the street.
Oh yeah, it's so good.
But you know what's so funny, right? Is that like with the whole death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, right? They were already in the news. See, there was a whole thing, right, where, DA presses charges against the police, and then the police union fires back and says, hey, this woman's, she has, a conflict of interest, like a political conflict of interest to press these charges against the police, so the police union is trying to fight it. But everyone, in all the newspapers, they kept reporting it as the police union, but it's not the police union. It's what's called the Fraternal Order of Police, right? Now, if you just Google, I had a friend that was in it, and I tried asking him about it. Fraternal Order of Police. Let's see what comes up. Let's even get an image. Okay, these are the people. So they have their logo is, there's different variations on it, but it has the Masonic checkerboard floor, the all-seeing eye, the handshake, and a lot of variations have the twin pillars. I mean, it's clearly a Masonic organization.
Yeah, it looks like the Eastern Star with the things around and the pentagram. Like that.
Exactly, right? Does everyone see that?
I can't see a bigger picture of it yet, but I see a little one on their website.
But yeah, exactly. It's basically the Eastern Star logo combined with a Masonic apron. So these are the people that are trying to get to undo the charges against the Baltimore DA. So then when the story comes out like a week later about this Masonic police force, I'm like, why is this a shock? Like, I don't get what the story is.
They're saying that they're like impersonating police officers. They were acting as if they were police officers when in fact they are in the Masonic Order.
So. I do also, I believe that there is and I could be wrong, but I think in Freemasonry there's like a, I don't know what you would even call it, like a kind of offshoot category that where I think Freemasons who are also police are part of it, but it's a
Correct.
Masonic organization. Mm-hmm. But I think this was actually the people that were busted with this, like they had their own vehicles, they had their own, I think all different kinds of resources and weapons and security. So I think this was, I think this is a different group than that actual inner Masonic, group, you know, but both definitely, you know, equally,
the difference on the surface, but I mean, I guess I'm sorry. I'm taking like a zoomed out view of this. I'm saying like, well, just be, you know, who gives authority to these police to be real police, and who gives authority to these other people to be not real police? Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
is that even like really? And they're both
Right.
Or in the first fucking place.
They're both
people never even heard of this fraternal order of the police.
What I'm saying is they're both groups that I certainly didn't cede authority to be able to pull out a gun on me with no questions asked. I didn't cede any authority to either of these groups. They're both Masons. They're both, you know, dickheads with guns. I don't really see the difference.
Right.
Yeah. Good.
Oh, sorry, but just to say that, like, clearly the mainstream media does see a difference, or something, that, like, one is presented as the hero of, you know, and one is this strange villainous group. I don't know, it's bizarre.
What is their job, really? I mean, I don't... What are they actually doing?
According to the article, all that was said was, I think it was even from their website, is that they're dedicated to protecting, I guess, like, the lives of Masonic grandmasters. So it's basically
more than 325,000 members and more than 2,100 lodges.
Yeah, I mean, I assume that this is like, I can't help but think of the television show Grimm that I caught last year that had so many absolutely weird parallels in it. Have any of you guys checked that show out at all?
Grimm.
Oh man, it's so psychedelic. To lay it out, it's basically tales? Yeah. It's a cop detective show about a cop who finds out through his grandmother that he has a psychic gift to see this psychedelic layer of reality where all human beings, or actually no, a certain large portion of the human race is actually these animal creatures. So like, it's amazing, in the show police officers, not all of them but a lot of them, are actually these pig beings that have human forms to regular people, and they don't appear to be pigs, but if you're one of these gifted like good seers or whatever that they
then
call
you can recognize the cops are
then,
pigs
then you can see the pig cops in reality like at different times, you know. And then so of course the government officials that are above the FBI and the cops in the show are these reptilian beings that only the cop with the gift can see that there's these reptilian beings. And of course, the crazy other layer that opens up in the show is that these reptilian beings that are on top of the cops and all these other creatures are their royalty, that they're French royalty. So it's this whole absolute David Icke Merovingian lineage story. And so basically the Grimm is kind of like this good Templar character. It is like the archetype that I see coming out of it is that the cop is this Grimm who wakes up into that reality, and it's his force for good that will, you know, allow him to kind of like be that Templar justice, you know, divine righteousness thing. And so so he's part of this, you know, then police force in Portland in the show where he's part of a few good cops, but one of them is even like half reptilian or whatever. And he's part of this good secret police who fight against the bad Illuminati secret police, which is their own like, you know, fraternal police order thing that they have internationally. So it's such a trip to see the Grimm, you know, Templar good cops operating. And then like, you know, in reality, there's this, the same kind of back and forth, you know, above ground and underground narrative to the police. So, yeah, that show is such a trip, and I feel like it's somehow tapped into this narrative, you know.
Far out.
There's
I'll watch that.
I've only. I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure this is what this is. I've never actually seen the show, but I remember a commercial for it, and because it was about. It came out in 2010. It came out in September 2010, and it was kind of based on used September 11th as a plot point. And it has Tom Selleck. It's a TV show called Blue Bloods.
Huh.
And I'm trying to look at the Wikipedia for it.
Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck. Exactly. And if I'm not mistaken, the plot line was basically like that. There are these, like this family of cops, and then they have like this kind of secret police force, they're operating within a fraternal organization called the Blue Templar. Exactly. Yeah, it's a TV. This is this TV show is about. It's about Blue Templars, the secret blue police officers.
Oh wow!
And that ran. Oh, it's still running. September 2010 to present. CBS. That's
the eye, right?
But there's multiple shows about secret Templar police on right. the air. That's fucking super bizarre. Why are
it's
there?
It's conditioning because it's huge, probably. If they know it's going to get covered, they want to condition.
It's so weird, too, because it's like the strange thing is in these narratives on the shows, it's often like errors on the side of, you know, fighting this like New World Order and these fighting these like, you know, evil beings and stuff. And it is very strange. It's really, I mean, there's always the whole psychic projection element of, you know, history being at this time where the narrative is finally unfolding and unveiling that much faster. It's hard to tell how much is a weird kind of psyop or how much is like people jiving on the weird things being unveiled. It's like, it's also, you know
about Albert Pike's predictions of all the world wars and all of that stuff, that he apparently predicted World War I and World War II to an incredible degree. You're familiar with that idea?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I found this quote recently. I showed it to Baruch. That was really interesting. Albert Pike quote from 1871, the Third World War must be fermented between the political Zionists. He says this in 1871, between the political Zionists and the leaders of the Islamic world. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam and political Zionism mutually destroy each other. The multitudes disillusioned with Christianity, whose Delstic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal, will receive the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, brought finally out in the public view, which will follow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time. Pretty far out, though.
Yeah.
I've been familiar with that. That quote gets brought out pretty regularly in the more hardcore conspiracy circles. It's one of the things that, you know, it's why I don't just out and out dismiss the Masonic conspiracy angle. You know, it's like, well, he really did fucking say that.
Yeah, and that's pretty ridiculous. I mean, shit's coming to a head right now.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
And,
yeah.
Those are the key players to be able to have the foresight of political Zionism when Islam, because it wasn't what it wasn't there yet, man. That's shit. If you're gonna bet on people, you know, yeah. But I guess there's some idea. You know?
What do you guys? I mean, there's the thing that I think about sometimes is a similar sort of quote unquote prediction / you know, it's in the same vein as that is what's the guy the fucking Nazi scientist for NASA
Von Braun.
Von Braun talks about the four stages of, you know, basically manufactured war, right? And so he, what is it, the Cold War, it's the Russians. Then he says it's, I think it's rogue nations or terrorism. Then rogue nations. I've got the order on those. And then space aliens, right? Or asteroids. Right.
Asteroids, yeah.
Okay, so I guess maybe terrorists and rogue nations are one and the same. And then it's asteroids. But anyway, that was following this conspiracy crowd a few years back that kept talking about these two points, the von Braun prediction and the Albert Pike prediction / projection again, and or manifestation, however you want to word it. But everyone was like, oh, asteroids. And I'm like, chill, we're not, you know, if they're right what they're saying, we're not at asteroids yet. we're in the, you know, terrorism rogue nation spot.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, you don't really have to worry about asteroids tomorrow.
Right.
Well, you might, but they, who knows, you know, that's beyond.
You know, it's, there's something interesting to bring up here, too, that I've been wanting to dig deeper into. Is this, I think there's this, yeah, it's this document called The Externalization of the Hierarchy by Alice Bailey.
I know.
And yeah, it's a really weird one because it goes into a lot of different stuff. But at one point, there's this section about how she basically makes like a prediction, a similar kind of prediction about the future where she says, or she's kind of being told supposedly by these hidden masters, you know, that that the spiritual like laws and principles of the new age were going to start manifesting in the world, and that Masonic schools were going to begin influencing the culture through the aid of politics. I can't really quote a lot of this very well at the moment, but she's basically saying that mysticism and politics will start to blend in that way, and that the Masonic mysteries would become almost present in the popular culture, and that that was supposedly going to kind of raise the culture up to this new age.
Well, she should know her organization was behind the Occupy movement.
That's right, yeah.
But it's also, I mean, that can be seen as like a hopeful thing, right? If you believe that these doctrines are, you know, let's just for a minute pretend, total benefit of the doubt here, right? You're a Freemason, the idea of, you know, the idea of Masonry as to make a better man, right? Are you going to take care of your fellow man, and you're going to improve yourself? It's self-improvement and community, blah, blah, blah. The idea that in the future, our progress will have developed in such a way, I mean, I don't really see that all that different as, you know, when I talk with, you know, Will Morgan, and he says, in 15 years, everyone's going to look at movies this way. You know, that's not like because Will Morgan is the grandmaster of the Illuminati. You know, right. It's like, it's sort of a hopeful, like, you know, at the same time, though, I just sort of want to throw the idea of Alice Bailey talking about this idea of the politics and the esotericism coming more and more. You know, Kevin, you're up in New Paltz, where, Mitch Horowitz writes a lot about this idea of a lot of these schools coming out of that area of, mid-state New York, and how much this sort of connection between quote-unquote occult and political stuff was there from the beginning, both from a historical perspective of people, either as a, there's like, you know, the power desire, but there's also like, there was such a prevalence of like seances and things like that for anyone with any kind of money. That was like a entertainment activity. And same, I think, with certain Masonic things, right? Where like some of these schools, they sort of originally Masons, you actually were a Mason, you know, and then at some point, like a prince says, well, I want to be in this secret club. And they're like, all right, we can't turn the prince down. All right, we can't turn this aristocrat down.
And then we make another club within the club that's the real club. And then Everyone's like, oh, look at us in the club. They've been doing the same thing for fucking ever.
Yeah, I'm actually, I should mention, I'm going to be joining the local lodge up here right outside New Paltz in about a month or so. I've been kind of waiting to round some things off, but I've got my petition all signed up here on my desk, so I'll be a more informed Masonic resource for, always record discussions in the future.
Cool. You can. You should hang out with Justin Morgan.
Yeah, I've seen that he's doing that too. That's great. Mm-hmm. Super cool. Yeah, it's funny. It's my family actually. I've got this book about when my family moved into the Catskills. Originally, I guess it was like
16s or 1700s. I think it was 1700s, and they settled in the Catskills, and there's this spot, Howcott Mountain. And crazy enough, State Route 42 cuts through Howcott Mountain up here in upstate New York, which is absurd to me. I read in my family ancestry book that we were part of one of the first Masonic lodges in upstate New York, I guess. I think it was the Calhoun Lodge or some lodge in the Catskills. And so it was in my family for some time. And then I don't know quite where it dropped off. I don't know the rest of the ancestry too well. But it's interesting to kind of reconnect with that up in this neck of the woods, even though I was technically, you know, born on Long Island, which is not upstate New York. So it feels like this weird ancestral connection there.
If I may, I mean, that's it's a really fascinating story. And I have something you were talking about earlier, like the whole secret, you know, Masonic police and stuff. I have no idea how true this is. This is something my brother and I once, you know, paid some, I don't know, actually he did it, you know, it was sort of like, find out the meaning of your name, or the, you know, sort of like history of your name, right? You know, if you're like John Smith, okay, you were probably like a blacksmith or a, you know, whatever, right? You were some sort of Smith. You actually, you know, a Coleman or a whatever, right? These are like work names. Well, apparently Abadesa, according to this thing, Abadesa was the same sort of thing, where it was like the, like Abbey, like a church, you know, a holy site, like the Abbey, and then the Dessa, basically they were saying it was like a police force. It was like you would protect the nuns in the Abbey.
Oh, wow.
So that's interesting over the last few years as we sort of, you know, get more into some more of this sort of stuff. I'm always, every now and then when, you know, David or Patrick throws out the word, you know, Abbey, I'm sort of thinking of it in the back of my mind. But that's great if you can kind of track down your, you know,
Abbey Road of Thelema.
Yeah.
Right.
Your lineage.
Well, really interesting. I found that doing that when I went a little further back to try to get the etymology on what Halcott, where that came from. Supposedly it goes back to, I guess, England, and it was Halkett at that time. And it kind of changed supposedly over time from Halkett to Halcott. And, I guess they were some kind of like, part of a Royal Navy or Royal Army or some kind, that the Halkett, were part of some kind of military thing. But then going further back, the Halketts supposedly come from this Germanic tribe, which was the Halketts or something like that. And that actually means hawk's head. So then when you get into the weird history of the Celtic, you know, Michael Sarion stuff of how the Egyptian and the Celtic cultures were possibly connected at some point, it becomes fascinating to me how like Halcott and hawk's head and Horus and masonry and all these things are like so connected. So yeah, that was a trip to get back to Hawkshead at the end of my genealogical exploration, you know.
One of my favorite I don't know if it's a theory, because they've got some archaeological evidence, just you talking about those connections over in an oceanic distance reminds me of this, that in Illinois supposedly there's a cave where Alexander the Great is supposed to be buried. I don't know if you've heard of this, but they've turned up certain like Phoenician artifacts and certain people. It's like almost like a catacomb. I think there's like three or four bodies, and supposedly one of them is Alexander the Great, and it's still up in the air. But there's one guy in particular who's like a really devout investigator of it, and he's done other interesting things. His name's Harry. God, it's escaping me. He was on Red Ice once. He's sort of a throwback, but he's done other UFO stuff. Stefan Lemuria, he was big on maps. He was like, he did this whole little series on these old maps that show like Mount Meru near whatever, the Arctic Circle. And, you know, the ships going into Mount Meru or Lemuria or whatever it was. And I don't know if it was Lemuria... a Blavatsky invention, or was that before her? Was that
something? Does she mention?
Yeah,
she has the four main. She has the Aryan, the Lumerian, the Sumerian, and the Aryan.
Well, Lemuria is the land, like this land.
Well, you know that that's the whole Mount Shasta thing. There's like a ton of people, and I think it actually might be because of Alice Bailey.
Okay.
That they think that fucking Mount Shasta was the underneath the Lumerians were or are or whatever. They're light beings or they're real or whatever. I don't know. It depends on who you talk to.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I had some.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I don't know, just someone not long ago here in New Paltz had talked about how they have supposedly New Paltz is a place where you can connect with your Atlantean dimensional being or self, you know? I've heard numerous people say that, and it's funny that people have said that waterfalls and crystals have a lot to do with it. And it's interesting that New Paltz is this, the ridge here is all quartz crystal. And so it's interesting. I think quartz is, you know, used in a lot of computer and cell phone technology and stuff. So it's interesting that that kind of association of crystals and Atlantean stuff comes here, and then the whole mountain and the mountain stuff is over there. You know, like it's like no matter what, these mythic layers kind of do exist somehow. You know, so it's cool how everything has that its own mythic place that it invokes or evokes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's like what all, you know.
Well, it speaks to the fractal
intentional body, architecture.
Like for sure.
Right, right.
So it's like, or just that sort of larger holographic space that we tap into as well. So we have these objects, but our associations with them is almost, I don't know if cosmic's the right word, but at least global. And so it's like we're all tapping into those same associations in certain ways. We're in certain states of consciousness, right? Or thinking in certain ways. I think that's, again, the unconscious, collective unconscious. I think that's a physical element or dimension of it. And so, I don't know, I think we can all tap into, that's the beauty of focus locally, you still get a global perspective in a lot of ways, because, yeah, I don't know, it's like that you can find mythological elements or stories or fairy tales everywhere and in everything and in every life, and that's, I don't know, I think what's empowering about a lot of these sorts of intellectual endeavors or explorations is they give you that, at least a glimpse of that, even if you don't accept it fully.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead. Sorry.
No, I got nothing. Go ahead.
I'm just tripping out because I'm looking at Conk's Own Packs, Essays in Light. And I was reading, it was published in 1907, which I thought it was a later thing that Crowley did. I thought he got in the I Ching later than that, but that's fucking early, right? So the name Conk's Own Packs is a phrase purportedly used in the Eleusinian Mysteries. Its companion is Cobb's Pect, I don't know how to say that, which in the Egyptian language means, yeah, it means light and extension, but it's funny because it's like Ein Sof Or, the Or part, you know, so, right. But it also says Or light rushing in a rushing out in a single ray, used in the Hermetic Order, the Golden Dawn's Vernal and Autumnal Equinox ceremonies. But I thought that was really interesting because, like, I'm obviously thinking about the fact that, like, what is the fucking K-Pax thing? Is he crazy or is he light years ahead of the rest of us? Is actually what it says in the poster. And it has, like, asteroid or whatever, a comet or whatever, crossing the X of the Pax. And it says, change the way you look. And then there's a space where it's hitting and it says, at the world. So it just, the light of the crossing the X is very suggestive of a single ray of light. I was also, right. The single ray of light thing was also reminding me of at the Lucis Trust headquarters at the UN, there's that meditation hall where people will sit and meditate, and they have like a representation of the King's Chamber in the Great Pyramid where you have the single beam of light, whereas in that case it would go into the sarcophagus at a certain time in the day, And then if you had a Venus eclipse and supposedly you were drawing on the energy of Venus in the sarcophagus through the opening in the Great Pyramid into the King's Chamber. But you could take it, you know, the light rushing out in a single ray is very reminiscent of that room where the people, they'll just meditate all day watching this beam of light move across the room from an opening. So you can just give all your attention to a single ray. And that's the initiation process that they have at the UN, which is kind of weird that they have that in the first place. But
right. And I noticed I'm working on the next installment of my membrane series, and K-Pax is part of it. And there's definitely throughout the whole film, especially when he's with the therapist, I think on the therapist's desk is a crystal pyramid that in like all these different key scenes is as the camera moves, the pyramid starts refracting the light into a rainbow, you know, and then there's right. all those bluebird, you know, references. And then of course there's the guy that I mentioned one or two recordings ago, David Patrick Kelly, I think was his name. He's in like Twin Peaks, and he's in a bunch of sinky stuff. He was the dude that the Bands of Light references from. He's the cab driver who drops off somebody from like Friends or something, or like Mad About You, and they get in the elevator and they're talking about Bands of Light. But so of course this guy shows up in K-Pax too. He's the dude in the mental institution yelling about the bluebirds, you know.
That's the guy. Oh
yeah.
And
shit. So all my videos like that I've been compiling lately are about him. And so it's like perfect to focus in on him again.
Interesting. For some reason I was just continually making this connection between the bluebird and Venus and Lucifer. Of this whole fucking crazy thing that kept on going and going. And I remember after I did this blog, it just kept on popping up. It's like all these little references seem to be saying the same thing. That it's a star, but it's not really. It's a planet, you know. But it's referred to as a star.
Right, right.
Yeah, pretty trippy.
Have you guys seen Frantic, Polanski's film?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's tons of bluebird motifs in that film.
Oh, that's right.
Oh. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, well, that's ridiculous. That movie's ridiculous because he has the nuclear device in the Statue of Liberty. But yeah. The Statue of Liberty, he's in France, and so he's in exile. And so he like wakes up with the Statue of Liberty upside down or whatever. It was like that. That was so weird. I didn't complete. He fucks with you, man, because you don't always know like what he's exactly trying to communicate. Like, what he really? Why? How many fucking times are you gonna have a stabbing utensil pierce into the floor and stick straight up?
Yeah,
he does that over and over again. Didn't he do that in Knife in the Water too? Because he did that in fucking Bitter Moon with the fucking epidermic needle. The epidermic needle sticks into the floor. Obviously, Rosemary's Baby with the knife laying in the floor. But then you look at that, and then you look at, you know, Tate's 13 Cherries, where she keeps on stabbing the fucking chairs over and over. Oh, God. Yeah, it's really weird. I don't know what that's about. Feels suspect. Or is it just there to fuck with you? Is that, like, the whole idea? It's just like, well, if I keep doing this over and over again, you'll feel like there's something, you know.
Yeah, it's such a, I don't know, it's such a trip. It's so hard to distinguish the work of the universal mind and the personal mind, you know.
That's what I was just going to say, like, how do we even know, like, I assume not, but I do leave open the idea that what if it's completely unconscious on his part? What if he doesn't even, you know what I'm saying? Like, what if he didn't realize?
There's no way, because it's a focal point, and he makes it a focal point. He holds the camera on it. I don't know how you could possibly just accidentally keep having things land in your,
I don't mean land in it, but like, you know, if you're caught, if he's caught up in the like moment of making the move, and he's like, oh, I know what to do here. Now I'm going to close up on this fucking knife, and it's going to look so badass. Like I said, I'm not really voting for that as the likely answer. But, you know, right. Stupider things have happened where someone's like, oh, shit, yeah. Totally forgot that I did that before.
Yeah. What do you think, Patrick?
One of my sayings is, I know not all this is intentional. The problem is I don't know what is and what isn't, so I just throw it all out there, you know?
Right. That's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, I have to check that one out.
And just to be clear, in my example was where I said I just left open the possibility that it was unconscious. That doesn't mean unintentional. Meaning, you know, perhaps like an unconscious sort of admission of fixation.
Sure.
Just to clarify my point.
It's like the guy who just keeps on drawing dicks and everything but doesn't realize it. And everyone else keeps pointing it out, you know. They're like, oh, this guy draws dicks. And the guy's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he really doesn't, but he's definitely, like, for some reason, drawn to draw dicks. Yeah. Whatever.
But that's, like...
You can't not draw dicks.
But having that creative tension is really necessary. It's like, if you decide on anything, that's a dangerous thing. So it's the wisdom of Wilson and others that have said, and as David Bohm too, I'm rereading Thought as a System, and he has a lot, he's not as straightforward in the way he says it, but it's the same sort of premise. It's just like thinking about thinking and understanding you're mostly reflex, but there's something beyond reflex that can sort of reprogram, yeah, those anything that gets locked in that's kind of dysfunctional or whatever. And so it's been interesting to see how those two intersect, and I never really knew it before revisiting my books. That's part of the fun of revisiting old books. It's like I'm always looking for something new, but you got to go back and look at the old stuff.
You said it.
Yeah, it's
true. It's one of the best parts about it is because it's not the same thing that you saw before.
No, and your mind's not the same.
I feel that way about a lot of things. I was like, oh, I'm uploading all these synchronicity films, you know, and I'm like, I haven't watched them in a while because I've been down, I've just been kind of detached from them to a degree, or tried to be, and like I was like, oh well, I've seen that one so many fucking times, not to mention like figuring out in the first place, and I go to put it on, I'm like, I'm watching something totally different because it changes because you changed. It's like fucking Bruce Willis says in 12 Monkeys in the theater, you know, it's totally true.
Yeah, and it not only reinforces, but again, depending on your state of mind, it can totally reorganize your thoughts too. It's like it was part of your constellation, so you would think, oh, how could it reorganize? I don't know.
How couldn't it? Is really the question.
I mean, right. I mean, looking on it the right way, right now, couldn't it? But you also, there's that other side that just thinks, well, the conservative side of you, or the side that says, don't bother trying because it's something you've already visited or done or gone over or whatever. But everything
requires. And still the chase stands alone.
Your wisdom is so deep sometimes.
Hey. What is this? Okay, I'm sorry, guys. I have a confession to make. All of a sudden, I went on to the kitchen sink just out of pure reflex because I have a computer in front of me, and I see Joanna Linsky has said, I just watched this very interesting video that I think pertains to the phenomenal world, in a similar way as I discussed on my episode of Always Record with Monad Magoo and DVD Platypus. But it's a bit video. There's nothing to tell you here. There's nothing I can do with that unless I watch the video. Never mind. I just saw Always Record, DVD Platypus, and Monad Magoo, and was like, oh, well, this will be relevant. But I'm sure it is relevant, but there's nothing I can do with it because I would have to watch said thing before I comment. Never mind.
Thanks for wasting everyone's time.
I just fucking wasted everyone's time. People pay good money for
man.
People pay. I paid a full dollar. What the fuck am I listening to? Guys are just.
All right, now Patrick Svek has to do the. What is it from the Goonies? Truffle shuffle.
Truffle shuffle.
Oh, you got to do the truffle shuffle to get in. He's already in. He's already in the house. How do we get him to do the truffle shuffle?
People got to give people their 99 cents worth.
Besides, he doesn't have enough weight for the truffle shuffle.
No, I know. I've met Patrick. He's not a fat man at all in any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
But isn't that the same kid that grew up to be like a sex symbol?
And that boy became the
Chunk? Chunk was not a sex symbol.
Now he is.
Yes.
Oh, you're thinking of the fucking the main character guy. He's Rudy. He became Rudy.
He's fucking Rudy. There's
he's fucking Frodo. No, not Frodo. His friend.
I don't know, my man.
Fucking friend in the Shire.
Rudy's brother. Yeah, right.
Frodo's partner.
Sean Astin. And then,
yeah, thank you.
His brother is...
I wasn't thinking of Sean Astin, no.
No, his brother, then? You're thinking of his brother.
What? He's talking about Chunk, but then I thought maybe it was because, you know, fucking the other guy.
It's Corey Feldman. There's no Corey Haim. Like, Corey Haim was, I guess, technically a sex symbol, but Corey Feldman was in it. I don't know. There's a lot of options. I don't know.
There was nobody in Goonies that wasn't a sex symbol. Even fucking Sloth. Data?
I don't call Sloth, anyone ever jerking off to Data.
He's a fucking Chippendale, dude. What?
Data?
Data?
Yeah.
Can you track Data was huge, dude. That huge short round, too, man.
You know, what movie is it? Fucking Christmas Story. There's the kid that sticks his tongue. He gets his tongue frozen to, like, a pole, an icy pole.
Yeah, brother.
Yeah, he grew up to be a porn star.
That's an interesting sink.
I assumed everybody grew up to be porn stars.
Yeah, I think at least he did.
It was just the programming with the lamp and everything. That much repression.
At least he did.
Tongues and the legs and the lamps.
Now that's what I call a lamp. Tell you what, I want that lamp. I take that lamp. That's a fucking... That is a prize and a half. That is a distinguished award. You say you won that? Yeah. Only I didn't say fudge. This one right here. This was my wish. My dream.
Okay.
And it didn't come
I'm
through.
I'm sorry. I was thinking, in my mind, I was thinking of Jerry O'Connell, who's the fat kid in Stand By Me.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Any sliders or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
What'd you bring the comb for? You don't even have any hair. I brought it for you guys. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. Sorry. I had to sit here and go,
one food for the rest of your life. What's it going to be? Cherry flavored Pez.
Totally. Goonies and Stand By Me were both filmed in Oregon.
Oh.
There's really like a big overlap in those two movies in my mind now that I'm realizing it.
Let's watch them at the same time. Fuck
for
it.
Because like...
Only you didn't, you know, say Chopper's
basically, like, Stand By Me is based on the body, right? They're going to find the dead body.
I love
which
that
is
book.
Their treasure. And the Goonies, they're going to find the treasure of One-Eyed Willy, right? Which is the... basically, you know, they find the dead man's treasure, and
right.
In Goonies they get attacked by the octopus, and Stand By Me they get attacked by the leeches. You know,
they're
is this
both,
actually?
They're both going to look for a dead man because he's looking for One-Eyed Willy, and they're looking for the body. You're
didn't
totally
I just
right.
Say that? Didn't I just
you
say
did
that?
Say that. I'm just I'm okay. I'm basking in how interesting that actually is because it's a classic story going to find the dead man.
Yeah,
you're on your way to go look for the dead man. It's so weird, and that they're both like. Kid movies that are so, and they're generational perfectly.
Yeah.
Because the one is like what, the early 60s, late 50s maybe. I don't know. I can't remember. Is it right? I don't know. But yeah, the 50s, and then you got the fucking 80s. It's interesting, huh?
And then
another movie where they go to look for a dead person?
I don't know.
Is there any other movie where they go to look for a dead?
What person? Around that time?
I don't know, anytime. You name a movie where somebody goes to find a dead person.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of kids on a mission to find a dead person. I can't think of any other
movie. Well, it was Monster Squad. That definitely happens in Monster Squad.
You go to look for a dead guy in Monster Squad?
Really?
Well, or I can't quite recall if they... I think they're after some kind of dead monster thing by the end of the film.
A young group of monster fanatics attempt to save their hometown from Count Dracula and his army of monsters. I've never seen this.
Oh, I've
1987.
Seen that movie too many times.
Oh, good? It's super good.
Why have I seen Monster Squad so many times? I wanted that treehouse. The treehouse is shit, dude. That's part of that movie, was just to experience the jealousy of the treehouse. Lucky sons of bitches. When you're a little kid, you know. I mean, I haven't seen that movie since I was, you know, under 10 years old.
Yeah, it's great. My bandmate turned me on to it just a couple years ago. It's definitely a good classic to throw on in the Halloween season, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so River Phoenix was in Stand By Me, right?
Well, he ran through it.
Yeah, I believe he did.
River runs through it. Gotcha. Ellen wasn't.
Yes, that was in fact River Phoenix, who died in the Viper Room after falling in the Viper Pit in Last Crusade in Zion National Park.
Snakes. I hate snakes.
He died in the Viper Room with fucking Johnny Depp and shit. And then
he was the young Indiana Jones.
In the Viper Room on the train.
I know what you're talking about. He was the young Indiana Jones.
You've had this discussion.
Snakes. I hate snakes. Snakes on a train, snakes on a plane. I think we've had this conversation.
Snakes.